Welcome to the Litflix podcast, episode 7. We are books, movies, booze. So we read a book, we watch a movie, we have some drinks, and we talk about it. I'm Casey.
I'm Abby.
And tonight's episode is To All the Boys I've Loved Before by Jenny Han, published in 2014 along with the 2018 Netflix film by the same name. Tonight, I am drinking a Red Lotus, which is vodka, lychee, and cranberry.
Ooh.
I actually like it.
Sounds really good. So it's basically a vodka cranberry.
I mean, I'm staying true to myself.
Okay. I'm having, as a tribute to Laura Jean, I am having a cherry Coke with whiskey.
Oh.
Yeah.
How is that?
It's really good. It's super sweet and yummy. Yeah. She actually drinks black cherry soda in the book, but I don't know what that is. So
I don't know what that is either.
Yeah.
I was like, is that cherry Coke?
Yeah, I don't know for sure.
So do you want to hear about Jenny Han?
I'm really excited to hear about Jenny Han. I've been curious about her since I opened the book.
She was born in September 1980. She is Korean American. She's best known for the Summer I Turned Pretty trilogy and the To All the Boys trilogy. She was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia to Korean parents. She attended the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Oh.
Which I believe is the college that Laura Jean goes to in the third book, but I haven't read it, so don't quote me on that.
Okay. Doesn't it have some sordid racial history?
I believe it does, okay. But I'm not 100%.
We didn't read about that. Okay.
No, I didn't read about that. She earned her master's of fine arts in creative writing at the New School, and she graduated from there in 2006.
Okay.
I forgot to look that up.
Look what up?
The New School.
Oh, like what it is?
Yeah, do you know?
I mean, it's probably not real.
It is. It's in New York.
The New New York School?
The New School is a private nonprofit research facility.
Sounds like she went to school at Oscorp or something.
I have no idea what this
Spider-Man.
Is.
Okay, anyway.
So she wrote her first book, which is Shug. And
what?
It's S-H-U-G.
Okay. Do we know what that word means?
No.
Hold on.
I really didn't do enough research.
That's okay. To writhe the body so as to produce friction against one's clothes?
Oh, to shug? That's what that means?
To crawl, to sneak.
The children's novel Shug. That's all it says.
That sounds not okay.
Well, she wrote it while she was still in college.
Oh, wait. Hold on. It's an acronym also. Sugar? Never mind. This is not. No. Sugar daddy? No. I don't know.
Anyway, next she wrote The Summer I Turned Pretty trilogy, which quickly became a New York Times bestseller. Afterwards, she wrote To All the Boys, which was optioned for a movie within weeks of its debut.
That's pretty amazing.
The following novel, P.S. I Still Love You, won the Young Adult 2015-2016 Asian Pacific American Award for Literature.
Okay.
She currently resides in Brooklyn, New York.
Cool.
So this movie currently has a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
Yeah, it's got a great rating.
Okay, so nobody over the age of 14 has watched it then.
That's not true.
Okay, go ahead.
This is an Overbrook Entertainment production, and the company is actually owned by Will Smith. They produced I Am Legend, which we covered in episode 2.
That is so cool.
The other company that produced it is Awesomeness Films.
Okay.
But I don't know anything about them.
Well, they sound great.
The film's director is Susan Johnson, and the screenplay is by Sophia Alvarez. And the movie stars Lana Condor and Noah Centineo.
He's a cutie pie.
He's so cute. He makes the best facial expressions.
He really does.
I saw an interview with him and he was saying he didn't know that he says, whoa, 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 hey, 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 until he saw the movie.
Oh, that hits home.
And he's like, why didn't someone tell me I was doing this in every single scene I'm in?
Because he's adorable. That's why.
And I feel like it doesn't detract from him. No. So he can say, whoa, 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 whoa. Stop, 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 stop.
Yeah. Like, he's so cute.
It's really cute.
Also, I had to make sure that he was of age before I started like.
When that movie came out, that was one of the top Google searches.
How old is he?
Noah Centineo age. Yeah. And I thought, all of you dirty, thirsty old women, including myself.
We're like trying to make sure that we're not disgusting.
I know. I remember this person I worked with used to love the Jonas Brothers.
The Jonas
and
Brothers.
I was like, I don't know if you're allowed to like them yet.
You can now if you want to.
I know.
It does feel wrong. And if you reversed the genders.
I know. It's so messed up.
We're all disgusting. I have one thing to say about the woman who plays Margot.
Yes, Janelle Parrish.
30 fucking years old.
She is Mona in Pretty Little Liars.
She is, and she's 30 years old.
That's crazy.
And she's playing an 18-year-old?
Yeah.
That's giving me really, like, false expectations for how I should look.
Did you buy her age?
Honestly, I kind of felt like she could be their mom.
I get that.
Did you? I did and I didn't.
I didn't think she could be their mom, but I felt like...
Their young stepmom?
I feel like she's our age.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel like she was 18.
Yeah. I mean, I know she's supposed to be more matriarchal because she's, like, the oldest sister and et cetera, but...
Right. Yeah,
she did... She seemed... It was a little unbelievable.
I get that. All right, so I know that you don't normally read romance novels and you would never choose this book, so I actually wanted to do a little romance by the numbers.
Ooh, that's exciting.
84% of romance readers are female.
Okay.
Most buyers are between the ages of 30 and 54.
Cool.
They have an average income of $55,000 per year.
Career women.
60% consider themselves feminists.
Nice.
70%.
Wait, only 60%?
Yeah.
Why did I say nice? I don't know. I didn't mean to say that. I just heard the word feminism and I was like, yeah.
You're like, yes, feminists. 70% discovered the genre between ages 11 and 18.
Oh, so you weren't too early then?
No, evidently I wasn't. 35% buy romance novels more than once a month.
Oh.
And romance is actually the second highest grossing fiction genre, earning $1.08 billion a year.
Holy cow.
The first is thrillers at $1.09 billion. So more than half of the mass market paper books sold in the U.S. are romance.
That's awesome.
Here's the statistics and questions that kind of got me. It was this survey I was reading, and I'll put the link in our show notes.
Okay.
It's, have you ever felt ashamed of reading romance novels? 51% said yes.
Mm.
And the other one was, do you ever think romance readers are looked down upon? And 88% said yes.
Wow. That's really sad.
I know. I thought so, too. And I was reading, like, the average American only reads, like, 4 to 5 books a year.
Okay.
And romance readers typically read at least 30 a year.
So they're readers.
They love reading. And I think, why are we making people feel bad? Is this just another way to make women feel bad about, yes, one, enjoyment, two, sexuality?
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Because if that's the age bracket, that's right, technically past your sex time, I guess. I don't know what that's called, but...
It's,
According to
women, like, come into their prime in their 30s?
I'm assuming so. I'm better now than I ever was.
Most people are introduced between 11 and 18. Isn't that a great way for girls to kind of learn about their bodies and emotions? And, like, it doesn't have to be a dirty romance book, mm-hmm. but even if it is, like, what's wrong with that?
I don't think anything's wrong with it, as long as it's... There was a big hullabaloo about Twilight and how Twilight... Okay, don't grin at me like that.
I feel my eyes rolling.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with it. I'm just saying there was a hullabaloo about Twilight being inappropriate for young women because of the obsessive, possessive love that it exhibited. So as long as the, I guess, but it's a fantasy, but I was going to say, as long as the expectations are not horrible, then it's fine for young women.
So there's definitely problematic romance novels, especially when you get to the bodice rippers of the 70s and 80s. There's rape and all of that stuff. I understand. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
For the current writers, the current readers, I think that there's nothing wrong with having a woman even fantasize about having a strong man treat you right, who loves you and can pleasure you.
Preach.
Like,
I love that. Yeah.
I feel like it can be really empowering. And why shouldn't young women learn about this and read about this? And if this gives them this fantasy vision, why shouldn't you have it? Why do you have to accept men who just leave you wanting?
That's so... Yeah, totally. I'm trying to think if I have an opinion about it. I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I am judgy about romance novels, but I definitely, like, don't ever, 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 ever give them a second thought. And when you texted me and you were like, hey, did you watch To All the Boys I've Loved Before? I was like, no.
Of course you didn't.
But I love 10 Things I Hate About You, and this keeps getting compared to all of our 90s teen romances.
Yeah, it definitely has the nostalgia.
Yeah. So anyway, my point is I'm not an expert and I'm not like somebody who gravitates toward it, but I loved this book.
I have thoughts about it later.
Okay.
Do you want to get into the plot of it?
Before we get into plot, I wanted to kind of, I have something about the cinematography. Do you want me to do it here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Before we get into plot, I just wanted to talk about the cinematography. I loved how it was shot. I don't know any terminology, so I can't tell you specifically why I loved it. I just really liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I liked their use of color.
Yeah.
I thought the colors they used really gave it a sense of whimsy, and that kind of reflected Laura Jean's personality.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked to me like they used what's called a triadic color scheme. I learned about this today.
Ooh.
Yeah. So a triadic color scheme is when three colors that are evenly spaced around the complementary color wheel are used in conjunction. One color in the triadic color scheme is chosen to be the dominant one, with two others used in complementary fashion. Triadic color schemes are somewhat less common, but they tend to lend themselves to a comic book type of color palette.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I feel like we kind of got a comic book color palette with this. It was just it was softened for a more feminine view. So we had blue, yellow, and pink.
Yeah, there were a lot of times that I felt that fantasy feeling.
Yeah.
And just kind of magic in the air. Like,
it was that teal.
That teal wall she has in her bedroom is my dream.
It's beautiful. And even the hat box.
One of my favorite scenes, I know this is like jumping it, they take a bus into the mountains.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's so beautifully shot. And
with the tops of the trees being yellow.
Yes. Gold. And the movie kind of takes place in Portland. And Portland looks beautiful in this movie, and I missed living there for like 0.2 seconds, and then I realized these are beautiful shots and not life in the dreary, rainy city.
Also, we have a lot of people who poop on our sidewalks here, so... I'm just saying.
Don't get me wrong. Like, Portland is beautiful.
It is.
But it's also a little bit of a disaster at times.
I wasn't expecting Portland. I think you probably told me about it and I forgot. I was expecting Virginia because that was right. What was in the book. And my husband and I mm-hmm. were watching it and I was like, that's a lot of bridges. Oh, that's Portland.
I know. I was like, hey, I have driven that a million times. It was wonderful to see it again. It like made me like miss home because it's still kind of home for me.
Yeah, it'll always be like your hometown. So
I'm sure people don't know. I actually moved to Denver, Colorado this past summer.
Yep. And I've missed you every moment.
So, but born and raised Portland, Oregon.
Yep. How cold did you say it was this morning?
This morning when I got up, it was -5 degrees.
Oh, it's so cold. It was like 48 degrees here this morning.
It's flipping cold. Right now, it's about 13 outside.
Oh, God.
I have never experienced cold like this in my life. And there are huge temperature like fluxes. In the day, it'll be like 40, 45, and then somehow it drops below zero. And it's like a shock to my system.
That's incredible. I can't wait to visit. I want to visit you in winter.
I'm so used to a temperate climate.
Yeah. It is so temperate here. It's so even. Like, yeah. I forget how even it is.
Right.
In the wintertime, that it's the same temperature, whether it's day or night.
My mom flew out for the holiday and she's like, oh, look, back home, it's 43 in the day, 40 at night. And I'm like, ha, 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 it's 30 degrees, -5.
That's what you get for living on the top of Mount Everest.
It's crazy.
One other thing I have to say about the color that I thought was interesting. The article I read had an infographic and it showed a blue that was similar to the one in the movie. And it supposedly mm-hmm. represents isolation and passivity.
Ooh.
And so
I love that.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, Laura Jean, you're blue.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I thought that was.
I really love that.
I thought it was so cool. But I'll link that article in the show notes. And it made me really want to learn a lot more about cinematography. So I'm going to try to do like at least one term or something for every movie we do. Oh, in that article also, there was a YouTube video embedded that talked about David Fincher's use of color.
I love David Fincher.
Me too. And his color palette is one of the reasons I love him so much.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So you should definitely check that out. It's super interesting.
I will definitely check that out.
All right. Now that we're an hour in, let's get to the plot. that's a joke. Okay.
I know.
Laura Jean Song Covey is a 16-year-old half Korean, half Caucasian girl. She's extremely close to her older sister Margot and younger sister Kitty. Laura Jean keeps love letters to all the boys she's ever loved in a teal hat box given to her by her late mother. Just before Margot leaves for university in Scotland, she breaks up with her boyfriend Josh Sanderson, who's also their next door neighbor, the boy next door.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to say here?
I have a couple of things. I wanted to point out that I really appreciated the diversity of this movie cast, the mm-hmm. casting of this movie.
Yeah.
I like when you're in her high school, it looks like an every American high school.
Yes, it so does.
I also like that her dad is white and it's never mentioned a single time, which I appreciated. Like, it's just a fact of her life.
Right. It's not made into.
And I feel like race is such a big conversation and thing in our country. And I think by ignoring it, that's a conversation in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it normalizes it, which is how it should be.
I have had that same thought about so many different things. And I don't, mm-hmm. like, I've wanted to bring it up a lot of times. I just don't know really how to say it. And I think that's exactly how to put it. Like, let's get to that point in our culture where this is just life. We are just people. Can we please just
right.
be?
I think this movie did such a wonderful job.
Yes, I think it was. And the other thing about the children in the movie, or the kids mm-hmm. in the high school, whatever, they all looked like kids. Like,
yes,
none of them looked like playmates.
No, they look like average teenagers. That I think that's part of the reason why I love Laura Jean so much.
Yeah, because she looks like a real girl.
She's so real to me. Like, she has real thoughts, real insecurities, real issues, real, like, she's just so human and real.
Right. Yeah.
I loved that. My next thing, John Corbett plays her dad, and
I like him.
Finally, here we have the hot dad, not Bruce Willis.
Okay.
I think he's great in this movie.
I thought he was super cute in Big Fat Greek Wedding, but I didn't think he was that cute in this movie.
I think he was. I
No, you're right. He was. Too.
I think yeah. he's the hot dad.
He is the hot dad.
The relationship, the story of the family relationship in this story is so great. Like, this is the family I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
And I'm an only child, but this is how I would want having sisters to be.
Right.
Like, if I had sisters, these are the sisters I want.
Yeah, totally. Because they're all supportive of each other. They're all very individual, but they mm-hmm. all lean on each other and need each other. And they all bring something to the table. And right. they all and love they each fight. Other.
They like fight and have real issues. But at the end of the day, you're still family.
Right.
In the book, Margot keeps her breakup with Josh a secret.
Okay.
And I don't know why, like, I'm glad they cut it from the movie. I don't think it adds anything to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have any thoughts. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, it's like a thing.
In the book?
Yeah, it goes on for quite a while.
What? I don't know if I remember that.
Laura Jean covers for her that she didn't.
Oh, with their dad and Kitty.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I was just thinking about Laura Jean. I was like, no, Laura Jean saw them fighting. She knew.
No. Okay. With the, yeah. Okay. With the other two.
Yeah. I don't know.
I also have to ask you the question that's in the movie. So would you rather drink water for the rest of your life, or you can drink whatever you want, but it has to have a little drop of pee in it, and the pee has to be at least a little yellow?
Water.
Really?
Yeah.
One tiny drop of pee, you're still going with water.
Yes, I don't want to drink urine. Thanks.
All right, Margot.
Did you go with pee?
100% I went with pee.
Nope. Sign me up for sobriety. I don't want urine.
All right. I'm going pee all the way.
Okay.
Not like Bear Grylls drinking pee, like one drop of pee.
I guess that's tolerable, but I probably, here's what would happen. I'd dehydrate myself to death because I know the pee's in there waiting for me. And I would just be like, I couldn't do it.
You don't think it's so diluted you would never know?
You know. You chose.
There's pee in your whiskey right now.
Then I'm not going to drink it. Gross.
I hope you think about that every time you look at your bottle of whiskey now.
God damn it. Now it's just a bottle of urine. So here's one thing, and I don't know if you got this feeling or if I'm insane, but I felt like the movie didn't really capture the closeness of the family the way the book did. And I don't know if it could have, because it's such an in-depth thing. Like, the movie definitely focused on the plot of the boys, but I don't feel like I got as intricate of a look into the dynamics between Margot and Laura Jean.
Yeah, I think that they had 90 minutes and you still get the
gist.
Like, you still get the gist of it.
Yeah. I also felt like the movie kind of treated the dad a little bit more like a goob, which was fine because the movie was a bit of a comedy. I mean, the book was too, but like the scene where he gives her the talk in the movie
mm-hmm.
is hilarious. It's in the car and he gives her all those condoms.
It's fantastic.
It is so good. And their timing is so great. And it's kind of even more realistic than the one in the book because it's so awkward and ill-timed. Like, of course, a parent right. would choose the absolute wrong time to talk to you about that.
I also love when he's talking to Peter and he's like, no drinking, no drugs, no hands.
Yes, that was great.
Yeah, I thought he was, I felt he was more real. However, in the book, you definitely got the sense of how much the girls kind of baby and shelter him to make life easy for him.
That's true. Yeah, that's an interesting point.
I felt like he was maybe more involved in the movie.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I didn't see the girls. In the book, you really get the sense, like, they do the grocery shopping.
Yeah.
They do the cooking. They do the laundry. They do the ironing. And
he's a doctor. Why can't they have a maid? You know they have a fucking maid. Give me a break.
Like, in the movie, I felt like he probably took care of himself a little more.
And I felt like his hours weren't quite as weird as they were in the book. He was at hospital overnight and all that stuff. But the one thing that I really took away from both is that I loved how open they were as a family. Like in the book, mm-hmm. when he talks to her about sex and she's upset and Margot has mm-hmm. sort of spilled the beans, even though it's not even true. Her dad was like, I think you're too young for sex, but it's your choice. And I thought that was mm-hmm. so beautiful and perfect. Like, the world would be such a better place if we had more parents like that.
Right.
You know, like, here's my guidance for you, but you make your own decision.
Yeah. And I think that,
especially to a girl. So,
yeah.
So I'm about to say something really, really bitchy, but I feel like I wouldn't be like totally true to myself if I didn't say these things.
Okay.
So in the movie, I don't know if you noticed this, but in the movie, they're sitting at the dinner table and Kitty smiles this great big smile and her teeth are so weird looking. Like, it looks like she just swished with red wine or something. Like, I thought
she is a kid.
I thought it was going to be part of the plot, like a plot point.
Why is that a plot point?
I was like, what did she just do? Did she have to take on like a dare or something? Like, her teeth just look so fucking weird to me. I thought it was going to be like, you know, the reveal in Orphan where she's like a 37-year-old smoker. I was like, oh, Kitty's their real mom. That's going to be the curveball.
You are a bitch.
I'm a total bitch. But like, seriously, think about it. If they can give Laura Jean fake eyelashes, why couldn't they brush Kitty's teeth?
Oh my God, she's a child.
She still needs to brush her teeth.
You are horrible.
I told you it was bitchy, but I had to say it.
It's so bitchy. God.
Yeah. Yeah, what you were saying.
Sorry, I'm still like...
Did you not notice it?
No, not once.
When Kitty would smile, this great big smile, like, you know how when somebody drinks Gatorade and they've got red in their teeth?
I didn't notice that at all.
Chris drinks Gatorade and sometimes he gets red in his teeth. And I'm like, please go brush your teeth. Okay.
Okay, I didn't notice that. So you're a bitch.
I'm totally insane. I'm so sorry.
She's a child.
You keep saying she's a child. I'm not saying that she was dressed too provocatively.
I feel like you can't trash on how kids look.
She's 15. She's old enough.
She's fair game then. Never mind. Go at her.
If you're over 12, you're at my mercy. Okay. I'm kidding.
No, you're not.
I mean, I'm partially kidding. So you don't think
you're
she's a
37-year-old
smoker?
No.
Okay. So going back to what you were saying about all the dishes and all the like groceries and stuff, I loved all of that because I think it really speaks to the girls' strength. I mean, they're like, they show that they can be pretty independent. I mean, mm-hmm. they're dependent on each other, but they're kids, you know.
I also liked how like Laura Jean would forget to go to the grocery store and they're like, I guess we'll order pizza. How many nights has that been my life?
Oh, yeah. And I'm way older than her.
Yeah.
But it just shows how capable they are. And I think it shows also that Laura Jean needs to have a little bit more faith in herself. I think mm-hmm. we as the reader have faith in her and we know she can do whatever she wants to do, but she needs to get there. Okay, that's all I have. Are you ready to go back to plot?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Laura Jean, who once had a crush on Josh, finds her feelings for him coming back after Margot leaves for school. And Josh admits during a conversation about crushes that his first serious crush was on Laura Jean. To cope with her feelings, Laura Jean writes a postscript to a letter she wrote when she was 14, after Josh asked Margot out instead of her. She places the postscript in her diary instead of the hat box. Do you have anything here?
Thank God she did.
Oh my God. Yeah. Do you have anything?
There was a car accident here that was cut from the movie, and I actually like how they did it better in the movie.
Okay.
She totals her car, but in the book.
Okay.
And she like bumps in. Peter drives by and he sits with her, but she calls Josh to bail her out. In the film, however, you still get the point that she's scared to drive and Kitty wears a helmet. And I think it's the greatest thing ever.
That is pretty great. And when she almost hits Peter when she's backing out of the parking space. Oh my God, I love it. It's so, like, she gets so befuddled.
I love it.
So in the book with the car accident, she, like you said, she sits there and kind of asks, not kind of, she asks Josh, she calls Josh to get him to come help her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was this was pretty close to the beginning of the book. And so I was still trying to get into the story and like understand the characters and everything. And so I got really annoyed at how Laura Jean thought she couldn't handle the situation on her own. Like she really kind of sat there and melted into a puddle. But then she develops into this character that slowly learns how to deal with things without so much help. She does the same thing right after Margot leaves. And she even mm-hmm. says about driving that she thinks faking confidence will help her.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how all people get through things that are scary. You fake it and lie to yourself and say you can do it. And then you do. And then it's not a lie anymore. You know, yeah. So I thought that was really poignant and very like,
I think being as young as she is, totaling your car, this older man, she says he's older than her dad, gets out and yells at her.
Why didn't she call her dad, though?
Probably because he's at work and they don't call him. They try to take care of stuff themselves.
Yeah.
I think if Margot was around, she 100% would have called Margot, but she couldn't. So who's the next person on her list? It's Josh.
Yeah, because he's like their family.
I don't think she ever would have bugged her dad with it, though.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think they protect their dad.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that I started to get annoyed with her because I don't read books like this. And then
you got to give room for character growth.
Right. Exactly.
Not everything's a horror movie waiting for the killer to jump out.
That was another thing I kept waiting for is Josh kept saying that, or no, not Josh. Josh said that Peter was an asshole and Peter said Josh was a tool. And I was like, okay, who's the rapist here? Somebody raped somebody. I was sure.
No.
None of that happened.
No, none of that happened.
Okay.
You read the worst books.
We watched 13 Reasons worst. Why.
Like, I feel like you expect the worst out of every situation.
I do. That's why I'm so prepared for everything at all times.
I feel like you're not, though. If one thing goes wrong, you're going to fall apart.
Well, listen. I don't know what to say. Because you're right.
Okay. If anything goes wrong on paper, you are prepared.
There we go.
If it comes off that paper, you're fucked.
Here's what it is. I expect the worst out of people 99% of the time. I mean, think about it. We live in a 13 Reasons Why kind of world, you know?
Which is so depressing.
I know, but like that's one thing I loved about this book is that it wasn't that. Is that all the kids got to kind of retain some form of innocence. They got to learn things slowly. They didn't have to encounter any violence. It was nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one thing I didn't want to hear about, like some horrible backstory that Chris had. And I was glad that we didn't have that either.
It is a lovely bubblegum cotton candy story.
I actually had that written in my notes. I was like, is this real ? Or is this just fucking candy coated bullshit? And then I was like, no, this is probably pretty real for a lot of kids.
I think kids have this life.
Yeah. Doctor's kids.
I didn't have this life.
Right, me either.
Kids have this life.
Yeah. Our kids might have this life.
I hope so.
Well, I hope neither of us are dead mothers, but... All right. Anyway, this has gone off the rails. Okay.
Like always. Yeah. All right. Go on.
Another thing I have to say is about Josh. He looked like he was high through 100% of the movie to me. The actor.
He looks
dead
like
behind the eyes.
Rami Malek. The guy from Mr. Robot.
Oh.
And Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's not him though, right?
No. It's Israel Broussard, I think.
Whatever. He did not compel me. I didn't feel like I was in a love triangle at all because it's not even a choice.
I never once felt the love for him.
No. And honestly, he creeped me out a little bit. Not just the actor, but the character in the book, too.
Noah Centineo as Peter Kay would be my TV boyfriend.
Oh, so cute. Okay. Peter Kaminsky, one of the guys Laura Jean wrote a letter to, approaches her and tells her he does not have any sort of attraction to her. And this comes out of the blue for her. Laura Jean is confused but realizes that he is referring to a letter she wrote him years ago after he received it in the mail. Horrified, she tells him she wrote it a long time ago. Laura Jean recounts what prompted her to write the letter. When she was in seventh grade, she and Peter were with a group of friends when Peter kissed her.
Mm-hmm. I know you like the book. I don't actually like Peter in the book. I think he's a dick.
He's a little bit of a dick.
I think Noah Centineo is this character and made me love him so much more.
Yeah.
But I've also seen the movie. Like, I've probably watched this movie 6 or 7 times. I really love it.
Oh, I only watched it last night one time.
And I watched it way before I ever read the book. Like, I watched it when it came out. So I feel like he was really in my head and he didn't match the book character. So that kind of threw me.
I could see that. Yeah. Well, especially, and he drives an Audi in the book, not a Jeep. Like, he just isn't this lovable guy.
Right. And I felt like some of his quote unquote banter with Laura Jean was just him being an ass.
Yeah, I totally get that.
The casting for young Peter is so spot on. I don't know who their casting director was, but you are amazing and deserve all the props. Like, that is a grown-up Noah.
Yeah, that was cute.
A couple other things. So her letters in the books are a lot meaner, and she even says that Peter probably is spreading STDs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
She, like, right in the book, she writes down all the things she doesn't like about them to help herself get over them.
Yes.
Where in the movie, it's so sweet, and she talks about the gold flecks in his eyes.
Oh, that's so
cute. It, like, warms my little heart.
I have a little bit about that kind of stuff in a little while, too.
Okay. A couple other things. I like how they don't drag out the letter distribution in the movie. It all happens at the same time. Like, Peter's talking to her about the letter. She sees Josh walk up with the letter. She runs to a bathroom. Lucas hands her the letter.
Yeah.
And in the book, it's so spread out. And this, like, all of her nightmares happen within 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, this has to be the worst moment of this girl's life.
Right? It all just comes crashing down right on her head.
Yeah.
That would fucking suck. Which, like, how is her search for the culprit not priority number one?
I don't know. And I was just going to say, I think Lucas is such a great character. And I really enjoyed him in the movie.
Yeah.
I think he helps Laura Jean develop as a person, and I think it's great.
Yeah, we didn't get a whole lot of him in the book. We got some.
Right. I like him in the movie a lot better, though.
I like that he was her gay best friend. Like, that was nice. And he really helped, like you said, he really helped her through the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And helped her develop.
And he's so nice about getting his letter.
Yeah, he is.
Like, in the movie, he hands it back and he's like, this seems personal. And he's just so sweet about it. And you could take that in 100 different ways. And I think in the book, he's a little bit flattered that he got that because no one said such nice things about him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But I enjoy and appreciate him as a high school boy.
Yeah, because he's really nice. And that's
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm being fair, but my mind wants to go to that's really hard to find in a teenage boy, but I don't know if that's true.
I don't know. Well, I know like two of my nephews are teenage boys, but I'm sure I don't see how they really are.
Right,
like,
exactly.
I see the side they let me see.
Yeah.
But even at that, like I show them the side of me I want them to see.
Right.
So I don't really know how teenage boys are now.
So Laura Jean cannot find her hat box at home. The letters have been mailed to each of the boys. The next morning at school, Josh asks her about the letter to him. She lies and says she no longer has feelings for him and that she is dating someone else. When he asks who it is, she says Peter, as he's the first person she thinks of while he walks down the hallway. Laura Jean spontaneously jumps into Peter's arms and kisses him in front of Josh, and Peter kisses her back. Laura Jean explains her situation to Peter, who decides to go along with the lie, as he has just broken up with his long-term girlfriend, Genevieve, and wants a clean break.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was going to say, is like in the book, they address it a little bit that she wonders who sent the letters, but she doesn't obsess over it like I would. Like, I'd be on America's Most Wanted putting out a fucking APB for the bastard that did that to me.
Like the first time I watched it, she thinks it goes to Goodwill. And I was like, maybe someone mailed them. Like, if you opened it up and you see all these addressed letters, like maybe somebody dropped them in the mail.
That's another thing is. Oh, go ahead.
Like in the movie, you quickly see the look in Kitty's eyes.
Right.
And you saw her go up to the closet. So I'm just going to talk about it here. Kitty mails the letters. And in the book, she does it out of spite, which I didn't like. I like that she's doing it for the best reason she has. Like, you know, it's an 11, 12-year-old girl. She wants her sister to be happy. She takes a shot.
Yeah. I liked it in the book. It just felt more realistic to me.
I think Kitty's like so angry. She's like, I'll teach her a lesson.
Yeah. And that's that's something a 9-year-old girl would definitely do.
Yeah.
So
here is also, I just like the movie better. Like the conversation with Josh doesn't happen for a long time in the movie. I love when she pounces Peter on the track.
Yeah.
I love all of it.
Doesn't happen for a long time in the book.
In the movie.
What?
What her and Josh talk about that letter, and she's like, oh, I wrote it a long time ago, and then she jumps Peter, where in the movie she doesn't even talk to Josh. She just sees he's holding the letter and she jumps Peter.
Oh, okay.
They don't have a conversation until like way later in the movie.
Okay. The other thing is, I don't know if anybody in the book calls her out specifically for addressing the letters. But in the movie, Margot or Kitty, I'm pretty sure it's...
Oh, yeah. It's Margot.
Margot, yeah, does say something like, you were basically... Part of you was asking for this to happen.
Totally. And she's like, well, I didn't add a stamp. And I'm like, well, you still address them. Why?
Right?
Why would you address them?
That was the first thing I wrote down in my notes was I underlined that she addressed them, and I was like, what the fuck? Why would you do that?
Right. Why would you do that? Like, wouldn't you just write them in your diary if they're really just meant for you to say goodbye?
Exactly. Yeah. Do you have anything else here? Because I have a big, long thing.
No,
I don't. I have a big, long thing. Something that kept coming up was purging stuff. So you brought up Goodwill. In the book, their dad makes a bunch of trips to Goodwill after Margot leaves. So like purging, and I think they say even purging for him is like kind of therapeutic because there's this big change happening, you know, in their house.
Yeah. I like that she says you could probably talk to a psychologist and find out the reason why.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. So, and I relate to that a lot. I feel like whenever I start to get bummed out or something, I just want to throw a bunch of shit away.
I'm a closet hoarder.
You're not a closet hoarder. You're just a hoarder.
I'm not like going to be on the show hoarders.
Just because you put stuff in closets doesn't mean you are a closet hoarder. Everybody who knows you knows you're a hoarder.
I have a really difficult time throwing things out. My Spouse does not. He will get rid of anything and everything he can lay his hands on. So I did not relate to her dad.
You want to hear something funny? Mm-hmm. Last year, I took the day off work. It was right around New Year's. I took the day off work to get my house organized. And Chris was at work and he has a shit ton of clothes that he never wears.
You are a hoarder's nightmare.
I know.
I can see where this is headed.
I went through and I literally got rid of.
Oh my God. I would just.
Murder me.
Yes.
I went through and found everything that was the wrong size. And I literally got rid of like probably a good third of his closet, if not more. And I didn't tell him. He didn't even notice until about a month ago when I was like, your closet overfloweth again. Can we please do something about it? He's like, no, I can't do it right now. And I was like, okay, I'll just wait till you go to work and I'll do it for you.
Was he like, what do you mean again?
Yeah. I was like, you do know that I got rid of half of your closet last January. He's like, oh no.
I mean, you should probably come over and clean my house out. It'd be like so therapeutic to you.
I want to so bad.
I like almost have a panic attack getting rid of things. It's so bad.
So you're Laura Jean, because actually that's one thing I was going to say is.
I am. You are Margot.
Yeah, I'm Margot. You're Laura Jean. But I mean, I don't keep things together. Like you keep us on track. I don't keep us on track. You're the mom in this situation.
I think we balance each other. I just need you to come get rid of my stuff. Like I have it organized, but I definitely don't need it anymore.
That's the thing that drives me nuts is having stuff I don't use.
Okay, here's what I think it comes from. So growing up, if you got rid of it, there's no buying another one. Like if you get rid of it, it's gone forever. And so I hold on to things thinking I might need them in the future.
Oh, that drives me insane. I'm like.
Like, I think it's like a weird psychological thing, though.
You were programmed to do it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
So yeah, the dad does the Goodwill trips. And then Laura Jean does that major overhaul of her room at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so cool. And so I feel like these cleaning sprees tend to mark big moments for the characters. The family is continually purging stuff, but Laura Jean is constantly holding on to things. She holds on to the letters. She makes the scrapbook for Margot. She's super into vintage items. So she likes things that have a history and memories and are sentimental. I mean, the whole family is sentimental to some extent, but Laura Jean is really the one who holds on to stuff. And she even calls her love letters exorcisms.
Yeah.
Which I loved. She's purging her feelings, but she's still holding on to them in the form of the letters. Like
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like really kind of nice. I mean, it's beautiful, but she I think she eventually learns to find a balance.
Yeah.
Between really living like and fantasy.
That's great. I thought they did a really good job showing that balance in the movie with her fantasies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the purging thing. It's interesting.
The other thing is, like, on the other side of that coin, then you've got Peter who, like, the reason he goes into this scheme with Laura Jean is so that he can once and for all let Genevieve go. Like, he's constantly wanting to get rid of people. Like, he says that he's really happy. Not happy, but he says...
He says he doesn't want to belong to somebody.
Yeah.
And she says that she didn't realize it before, but all of her life, she's longed to belong to somebody and have them belong to her.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually really like that.
Yeah. When Peter and her are talking about Peter's dad leaving when they're at Peter's house, Peter says he's glad his dad is gone. And Laura Jean is like, yeah, you can, but... No, you're not. You still miss him. You can be mad at somebody and still be attached to them, basically. So he wants to cut people off and she wants to hold on to them.
I love that they kind of call each other on their bullshit.
Yeah.
And I love that you see real conversations between these two people.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
And it's funny that you say that because I remember kind of zoning out at those points and like getting really bored.
Oh,
but
I think it shows like such a real human, honest interaction.
Yeah. And I think that's really great. I didn't appreciate it until we started talking about it.
I think how many people can you sit down and really be that open with? Because I think it's a very short number.
Yeah.
To be that vulnerable and honest with somebody.
That's true. Yeah.
And to have somebody be like, no, that's not actually. If I'm like, oh my gosh, I hate blah, blah, and you're like, no, you don't. You're just upset at the moment. Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's true. Like, not very many people would call me on that.
Yeah. And especially at that age, too.
Yeah.
It's really hard to be super honest about yourself, A, because you don't even know who yourself is really yet. And B, mm-hmm. because you don't know how the other person's going to react. So yeah, that level of trust is big.
It's such a vulnerability.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Laura Jean and Peter set up a list of ground rules, aka a contract, on how to act around each other. The more time they spend together, the more confused Laura Jean gets about her feelings. Josh becomes jealous of Peter, and when Laura Jean confronts him about it, he kisses her. And tells her he wants to be with her, causing Laura Jean to realize that she no longer likes Josh and that she wants to date Peter for real.
I haven't read this book, so I might be talking out of my ass, but Josh almost reminds me of Lori from Little Women, where he wants to be part of the March family so bad. Oh. He doesn't care which sister gets him there.
Oh, that's so funny that you bring that up. But yeah, that's, yeah, good connection.
Like, with Josh, like, kissing her, I'm like, you don't like her. You've had all this time. You don't feel this. Like, I feel like you just want to be part of the Covey family. You just want a Song Covey sister.
She says, like, and I think that's part of, well, for me, with Josh, that's kind of what lends to his creepiness, is when Laura Jean says, are the Song girls just interchangeable to you? And they mm-hmm. kind of are.
That's when I felt like, he was Lori. You propose to Joe and you go off and marry Amy. And yeah. He, like, in Little Women, once again, I haven't read the book. In the movie, Christian Bale says to Amy, I've always known I'm supposed to be part of your family. Just like you've always known you're going to marry someone rich.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, fuck you, man. Love her for her. Yeah. Like, you don't get to just pluck a number out of a hat and marry whichever sister you want. They are people.
Right. Yes.
And I know Josh and Laura Jean are friends, but I feel like he had a crush on her way before. But you got over it. You're with her sister. You're in love with her sister, supposedly.
How did that whole thing happen? He asked Margot out? I forget.
Yeah, he... Because I remember Laura Jean talking about Josh came up to her and she was so excited because he liked somebody and she thought it was her. And then Margot comes home and says that they're dating.
Oh.
And she's devastated.
So he couldn't have liked her that much if he just moved on to Margot.
Right. I feel like she was a blip. And I'm like, did you like her?
He's bullshit. I don't like Josh.
I don't either.
I really hate him.
I'm glad he didn't kiss her in the movie.
Oh.
Like, it's such
did he bullshit try
in the book. No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Like, the big fight later
mm-hmm.
just comes from Peter saying that Laura Jean was in love with Josh.
Oh, okay. But
he doesn't kiss her. He doesn't, like, make a move on her at all. He talks about how confusing it is for him, and I get that. I respect that.
Yeah.
Like, it would be confusing. He's blindsided with this information.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just felt like they are interchangeable to him. I don't know that he actually likes Laura Jean. And I'm glad that she realizes that she no longer likes Josh.
Me too. On the school ski trip, Peter tells Laura Jean he wants to date her and they kiss in a hot tub. The following day, Genevieve tells her that there is a rumor that the two had sex in the hot tub and Peter did not deny it. Humiliated, Laura Jean avoids Peter during Christmas break. Kitty invites him over to the Coveys' recital party, which they had every year before their mother died. When Peter tries to talk to Laura Jean, Josh steps in to try to protect her, and Margot ends up hearing about Josh and Laura Jean, how Josh and Laura Jean kissed.
So in the book, he tells her, Peter tells Laura Jean that he wants to date her, and she's like, no, you don't. And I just felt like I felt that on such a deep level, just being like an insecure teenage girl. Mm-hmm. And being like, there's no way you could like me. Like, you're so cool. You're so popular. Like, I'm nobody. I'm invisible.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about that from like her self-worth. It, yeah. In the book, mm-hmm. it says that she feels invisible, like she's just part of the background. But that means she also discounts her own power, like in her own life and her effect on other people too, because it really does hurt Peter's feelings when she doesn't sit next to him on the bus.
She hurts Peter's feelings a lot. There's yeah. a scene in the movie in the diner. She hurts his feelings.
Oh, yeah, because it's all just pretend.
Right.
Oh, his and face then, was so sad.
I know. And then again here, but I, like, I remember feeling that way as a 15, 16-year-old girl.
And you don't ever want to assume that you have any effect on people, because then if they play it off, then you look like an idiot, you know?
Right. And like, if the coolest guy in school was like, yeah, I really like you, I would have been like, what? No, who? I'm nobody. Like, there's no way.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't. Like, this is a joke. I'm going to be the nerd that shows up. Like, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And so I got where, like, it was just so relatable to me.
Yeah.
And I think even sometimes now I feel that invisibility. Mm-hmm. There's this girl I went to high school with, and she is an amazing baker. And so I ordered my daughter's birthday cake from her. And I sent her an email, and I'm like, hi, this is Casey. We went to high school together. I don't know if you remember me. And she's like, of course I remember you. And I just assume that nobody knows who I am.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I still...
Everybody knows who you are.
Oh, yeah. I'm so great.
Your reputation precedes you.
I feel like once I'm gone, like, I'm just erased.
Yeah.
And that probably doesn't say much about how I see myself.
Which is sad. And yeah, it's like...
It was just so relatable to me.
It really is. The other
even as an adult.
Yeah. The other thing that I kept thinking about was, and I know it's a like a stretch, it's not like parallel that really, but like I kept thinking about Pride and Prejudice, where Elizabeth Bennet, she does have some prejudices against Mr. Darcy, mm-hmm. because he's rich and popular and all that stuff. And so mm-hmm. I think this is kind of one of those things where she's underestimating herself, but she's also underestimating Peter's emotional depth.
100%.
She just sees him as that jerk, just like we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So, yeah.
That makeout scene in the hot tub is just, it's hot.
I was having to fan myself while I was reading the book. For sure.
And in the movie, Noah's face is the cutest thing ever. And when he like flicks water at her.
Yeah.
It's so cute. And here is another color scheme. You get that beautiful teal color.
Oh, yeah.
I know that I saw it, but I didn't think of it as the cinematography until you said that in the beginning of this episode.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I feel like warm inside, like these warm, gooey, marshmallowy feelings.
And I think that's exactly what you're supposed to feel. Plus, it helps that that's one of your favorite colors.
It is love that color. I think it's cute that she keeps trying to break up with him and he's not having it. And by watching this so many times, I can see like from the beginning, he's liked her this whole time.
Yeah.
Like once you keep going, I'm like, oh, hey, he's into this little fakery because he has the hots for you anyway.
I'm really glad that they didn't actually end up having sex in the hot tub, because that is a UTI waiting to happen. Like, think about it. If people can get infected limbs from hot tubs, just imagine the uterus rot that could result from it. It's gross.
This is a PSA. Do not have sex in chlorinated water.
No. That other people have probably been drunk peeing in. Ugh.
Yes.
Grody.
Okay, Jen is a bitch for telling everyone they had sex.
Yeah.
The other thing in this movie, there's a video of them making out in the hot tub and it kind of goes viral.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's different from the book.
When I finished this book, I couldn't wait and I started the next book, and it actually it's a much bigger deal in the next book. So I think they just took it out of book two and put it here.
The viral video?
Yeah, it plays out a lot the same, but it's in P.S. I Still Love You.
Oh, I get it. I love in the movie that she calls it a sex tape.
I know. Like the first time I was watching it, I was like, wait, did they have sex and I don't know it? Is this a Fade to Black that I didn't know? And she's like, I made a sex tape and I didn't even have sex. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
So cute. And it's just super funny.
I also really like when they go on this trip, I feel like you really see her world opening up with Peter.
Uh-huh.
Because she's making friends. She's really pushing herself. And I just think it's wonderful.
So that was another reason I didn't like Josh. It's part of the reason I find him creepy. He's jealous and he's a little possessive. And he tries to keep Laura Jean stagnant. He doesn't seem to want her to change.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter tries to exert his will over her too, but it's more in a way to get her to branch out and experience new things and to get her out of her shell. And Josh, even when they were having that fight, him and Peter, he kept saying stuff like, Laura Jean would never do something like that about the hot tub sex. And I'm like, how the hell do you know? Even if she did, why is it his business? Plus, He says it like it's some horrendous thing. And it's like, this happens all the time. It's just sex. Calm the fuck down. And it's her body. She can do whatever the fuck she wants.
I don't want to talk about it too much because they are making the sequel. So I want to do that. But in P.S. I Still Love You, there's a big part about how it is always worse for the girl. And there's such a stigma about females having sex.
And Josh really brings that up.
He does. And I think the author does a great job in the next book dealing with it.
Yeah.
And I felt like the movie glossed over it a tiny bit.
And oh, go ahead.
The fallout of this thing she did that was her choice, that was their moment. Like, it's such a private, intimate moment and it is theirs.
Yeah.
Like, you have no right to comment on it. Mm-hmm. You have no right to judge it.
Right.
I feel so bad for kids this generation growing up with social media the way we have it.
Yeah, where it's everywhere all the time.
And anyone can say anything to you at any moment of the day, and it's not nice. Like, it's not always positive.
Right.
And this goes back to how we were talking about the 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful that I am past that age.
Oh, me too. God, I wouldn't go back for anything.
I still have anxiety on putting things out now, like at this age.
Yeah.
And what if the things people say, it's hard and you have to have a thick skin. I look at celebrities and the things people say to them.
Yeah. And how I talked about Kitty's teeth like an asshole.
And she's a kid.
She doesn't deserve it.
But I just, yeah. Anyway, it's their moment and no one has a right to comment on it.
Yeah.
Or film it or post it.
Right. And she does have, in the book, she does briefly say something about, because Peter, one thing I really liked, he was like, well, who cares? You know, so somebody's talking about it. I told them it wasn't true. Whatever. And she's like, yeah, but you don't understand. It's always way worse for the girl, which is such bullshit, but it's so true and fucking sad.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that the author of the book is a woman. Mm-hmm. The screenwriter is a woman. Mm-hmm. The director is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it handles a young woman's perspective precisely.
Yeah.
Accurately, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I just, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that.
No, I agree. And I'm trying to verbalize what I'm thinking because I'm thinking something along those same lines of, I feel like this is closer to what your average teenager experiences. Like, it's not always a rape in a hot tub. It's not always something like that. There's a lot more nuanced sexism that happens.
Mm-hmm.
That women have to deal with all the time, constantly. And I think this captured it while also letting Laura Jean still be an innocent kid.
I felt so bad for her because she makes this decision. She has fun. She owns how she's feeling and her sexuality here. And then somebody just takes it and I don't want to say not destroys it, but
they take it. It's not hers anymore.
They like mutilate it and yeah. they turn it into something else.
Right.
And that's not okay.
Right.
Anyway,
Margot and Laura Jean eventually reconcile, but Laura Jean remains angry at Peter until Kitty admits that she stole her sister's hat box and mailed letters to try and get Laura Jean a boyfriend and to try to make Laura Jean finally happy. Kitty tells Laura Jean that Peter really cares for her and returns the hat box that is now filled with notes that Peter gave Laura Jean while they were fake dating. Reading them over, Laura Jean has a change of heart and takes out her pen and paper to write a real love letter to Peter.
Mm-hmm.
That's movie plot, though. I think
yeah.
whoever wrote this plot has it confused.
Kitty did it out of spite.
In the book, Kitty does it out of spite because she's her Laura Jean's joking around that she's going to name her dog Josh.
Because Kitty also has a crush on Josh yeah. because all the Covey sisters love Josh.
Right.
The Covey family loves Josh.
Right.
Laura Jean purges. When she's in her purging stage, she throws out all of the notes that Peter wrote her.
I forgot about that part. Yeah.
And Kitty pulls them out of the trash.
Yeah.
And saves them and gives them to her. And I don't think Laura Jean read them before. Do you? Like, I don't think she was reading his notes. But when she finally like sits down and reads them, it really is a love letter.
It's really sweet.
It's so sweet.
Yeah.
I like the ending of the movie better. I think it ties it up, but I think they did that because there was already a sequel to the book, so she didn't have to tie it up.
Right.
Where in the movie, she does. In the book, there's a whole scene where she tracks down John Ambrose McLaren at a Model UN scrimmage.
Oh, yeah. I had no idea what that was. I had never heard of it.
In the movie, he pops up at the very end holding flowers and her letter, and Kitty answers the door and yells, "Laura Jean, it's for you." And then I love that. Really quick, Netflix has announced they are making a sequel. There's a really cute movie with clip with Lana and Noah, and at the end of it, she tells Noah she's going to have to call him back. And she picks up the phone and says, "What? Oh, my gosh, you're going to be the perfect John McLaren." And I don't know if they're recasting it for the sequel. There's a rumor that Cole Sprouse is going to be.
Oh, it, OK.
Which there's like a fake movie poster going around.
Hmm.
Some people like that idea. Some people seem to hate that idea.
Is he a little old?
No, he's not old. He fits it really well.
Does he? Okay.
But people want the person, I don't remember his name, in the movie to play the role.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who it is. I can't remember. Yeah.
I feel like an idiot because I have something to tell you. What I really wanted to do for this episode during the hot tub scene was find erotic fan fiction that we could read.
Ooh.
That would have like actually played out the sex scene in the hot tub. I was hoping to read like a little snippet, but I couldn't find anything that specifically was the hot tub scene. So I decided to skip it. But as I was reading, I was like, I found out that after the credits, he shows up.
Did you not see that in the movie?
I turned it off as soon as it was over.
Oh my God, fuck you.
Yeah, like they were still panning out on the rugby or soccer field or whatever. And I was like, okay,
lacrosse.
Done.
Lacrosse. He plays lacrosse.
Sorry, lacrosse. I was like, all right, let's move on to like horror movies now. So,
did you go back and watch the end?
No, but I got the gist from the internet. Sorry.
Okay. Is there fan fiction for this book?
There's some. I read some dirty ones, but they all take place in like when Peter's mom's not home or it's like 5 years later or they're in college or something like that. None of them were the hot tub scene. I wanted the hot tub scene. Huh. So you can go look that up on your own.
Okay. I'm going to look up erotic to all the boys.
That's what I did. I typed into all the boys I've loved before erotic fan fiction and stuff came up.
I am amazed at how much erotic fan fiction is out there.
Why are you amazed by that?
I think it's amazing that people sit down, like the amount of people that sit down and write it.
Yeah.
It like boggles my mind.
And it's so great, isn't it? It's like this community of people who all love something so much that they just want to see it continue on and on and on.
Or they love it so much, but they wish it was dirtier.
Yes.
It was spicier.
Yeah. Which is, yeah. Anyway.
I don't know. I started the second book because I just couldn't wait. I hated that it ended. Dear Peter, I was like, fuck you. Where's the next book?
Yeah, that would have sucked to have read that book if the second one wasn't out.
Yeah, and if the movie didn't conclude the way it did, like I would have lost my mind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like cliffhangers.
I hate them. I think they insult your intelligence.
It makes me go a little bit crazy.
I don't like them because it's like, if your material was good enough for me to come back, I'm going to come back. A cliffhanger does not make me come back. Sorry.
I was reading some interviews with Jenny Han, and she was originally only going to write two books, and then she had started another one. She said she was really struggling with it, and she felt like Laura Jean's story wasn't over, so she went back and wrote the third book.
That's really cool. Did you see her? Did you notice her cameo in the movie?
No.
Yeah, when they're at the dance, when it's the flashback to the dance.
Oh, yeah.
She's that chaperone right there.
That's so cool. I'm gonna go back and watch it again.
Yeah. I thought it was her.
I've watched this movie twice this week.
Okay, see, you're an expert on this movie. I am not.
I'm obsessed with this movie. I love it so much.
I'll have to watch it again because, like, the first time I watched Pitch Perfect, I hated it. And then I watched it again and then I loved it. So it takes me a while to warm up to things, I think. But my final thoughts are definitely, I loved the book.
I was going to tell you, Andrew actually watched this movie with me and he did not enjoy it.
What did he say about it?
He said he felt like it should be a TV series and he kept waiting for something to happen, but nothing ever did.
Huh.
And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, well, you're Abby and you're waiting for someone to get murdered.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
And that's not the point of this movie.
Right.
Or the book. I think you and me disagree because my final thoughts are the book is fine, but I love the movie.
Interesting.
I think that it has great themes of friendship, love, family, strength, taking chances. And I feel like it's one of the best teen rom-coms since 10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay.
I made the mistake of watching Netflix's other teen rom-com that came out about the same time, which is The Kissing Booth.
Oh.
And when you watch these two movies together, like, you can clearly see the elevation of one of them.
Okay. I was wondering about that other one.
I think this movie takes things in the right direction. And I feel like they really got it right from everything from Peter not drinking at the party to her dad handing her condoms. Like, I think these are important things to show.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that he was drinking kombucha.
I know.
That was great.
In the book, he does drink beer at the party.
Yeah.
And her dad doesn't give her condoms. He's like, I'm making you an appointment and I think you're too young. But I don't know. I think the movie, I really just feel like they got it so perfectly right.
They did do a great job. I felt like visually, I loved the movie from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. I could watch it all day. Oh my God, the house porn in this movie. Like, I want that kitchen. I think I think there's a chair in there from IKEA that I need to get for my pod cave.
They have the same plates I have.
Of course they do, because they're from IKEA, right?
I know. My house is basically an IKEA showroom.
I love it.
I love IKEA.
So visually, yes. Acting wise, great. I just mm-hmm. felt like the book had a lot more. I mean, it's a book compared to a movie. So I felt like the book had a lot more depth. And I just, yeah, that's just how I felt.
I think that's great. I
like the book made me cry.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I teared up a couple times towards the end.
Yes. Yeah.
Like I was feeling it. I just feel like the movie erases things from the book in my mind. I don't know if that makes sense.
No. What do you mean?
Maybe it's just because I saw it first. The movie overshadows the book for me.
That might be true, too, because your expectations are set up a little bit differently. I wonder if I had seen the movie, if I would have liked the movie better.
Mm-hmm.
So
I usually try to read the books first, and I had no, like, we weren't talking that much about the podcast at that time, and I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to save this.
Right.
So I just watched the movie and I loved it. And in my head, like I didn't plan on reading this book.
Right.
But yeah, it just kind of overshadows it for me. I don't know what I'm saying, but I think it's just because I saw it first. And that's, it was built up a lot in my head.
That makes sense. The thing I love about this whole scenario is that I picked up a book and I watched a movie that never in a million years would I normally have
mm-hmm.
consumed in either form.
I know. I told you to watch. I've been telling you to watch this movie for months.
I know.
And you wouldn't do it.
Well, because my time is precious. I'm not going to waste it on something that I don't know I'm going to like usually. But it's just like Laura Jean, you know, you got to relinquish control sometimes to find out what you like.
It's not a waste. It is fantastic.
It's not a waste. It was a great movie. I loved the book. I definitely recommend both of them, even if you don't normally like these things. And my husband, he didn't even hate it.
Oh, that's amazing.
We watched it together and I asked him, I was like, did you hate that? And he's like, no. And I was like, really? Okay. And he's like, yeah, it was fine. He thought there were funny parts. He liked it.
On Jenny Han's Instagram, she has this series of videos that are the actors reenacting like previous romantic movie scenes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's a scene with the guy who plays Josh doing Breakfast Club. There is Lana and Noah doing Dirty Dancing.
Oh, that's cute.
There is the girl who plays Chris doing Say Anything.
And I then liked her.
There's another one of Josh doing the bleacher scene from 10 Things, how Heath Ledger did it.
Oh, that's so cute.
And I love it so much. Like, I feel like they had such a great time making this movie. And I think maybe that's part of the reason why it's so great. Like, everyone seems to enjoy themselves. And we didn't talk about it. There was kind of this controversy on the internet. I don't know if it's a controversy. It was a big hullabaloo that Laura Jean's lock screen at the end when she's deleting it, there's her and Peter laying down on a couch.
Yeah, and they're sleeping.
That was like a real picture of the two of them sleeping that someone from production took. And I think it's so cute. And people are like, I want the deleted scene from that.
Oh, that's yucky.
And I was like, I don't want the deleted scene from that. It's just so cute.
The picture is enough. It's really cool when people who work together make friends like that. And I think it really helps build a fandom.
Yeah.
It builds a fandom around it because you want to be part of that group. You want to be part of that relationship almost.
And every time I see them together, it just makes me so happy.
It's just like how Jared and Jensen are on Supernatural. They're best friends mm-hmm. in real life. And it's like, oh, you can just feel it. Like, you can feel it, you know?
Yeah, it comes through.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, yeah, definitely a recommend on both counts.
I do, too. I think they are great.
The end.
I would like more. I really would like more movies like this.
I would too. I agree.
Okay. So Please join us next Sunday for our Lit Bits, where we'll talk about any other things that we've been reading or watching, along with any current events from the movie or book world. And if you're reading along with us, our next book will be Bird Box by Josh Malerman, along with the 2018 Netflix film. Our episode will be released in 2 weeks.
Yay, back to horror.
Yay, back to Abby's world. We would love to hear from you. You can find us on our website at thelitflixpodcast.com or email us at thelitflixpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can even check out our extensive To Be Read list on Goodreads. If there are any books you would like us to cover, please let us know. We would love some suggestions from listeners.
Yes, I want to know what people want to hear. And I want stuff that, like, I wouldn't necessarily read, just like with this. This was a lot of fun.
Push Abby.
Yeah, push my boundaries, baby.
Yeah, I'm tired of reading just Abby books.
I know, my books suck. No, my books were great.
Yeah. So please rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Cheers.